Public radio is here for you. It doesn't matter how old you are, how big your home is, or what kind of car you drive. WOSU and NPR connect you to news and information in civil conversations. That's why 43 million Americans listen to NPR each week. WOSU is part of our community, covering and discussing issues important to you, standing with the facts. Meet the moment with WOSU. Go to WOSU.org/protect. This podcast was recorded Thursday, July 17th at 10:28 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like Governor DeWine will form a working group to track the effectiveness of his many working groups and task forces and blue ribbon commissions. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who complain about the deep state until they are running the deep state. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, our Snollygoster of the Week award goes to a school up north, just not that school up north. But first, this week, a roundtable discussion of some pretty big political items in Ohio. Giving hundreds of millions of tax dollars to a private company making lots of promises, a candidate for governor trying to scare away competitors with his aggressive fundraising, and perhaps the biggest issue, property taxes. Ohio is in the early stages of a major fight over property taxes. Thanks largely to rapidly rising home values, property taxes have jumped, on average, about 25% to 30% in recent years. Homeowners are mad, especially homeowners on fixed incomes who have no plans to move and cash in on their home's equity. As part of the state budget, lawmakers tried to tinker with the system in the hopes of slowing or reversing the property tax increases. Governor DeWine vetoed those line items, and now lawmakers stand ready to override those vetoes. A proposed constitutional amendment to completely eliminate property taxes looms. A couple of state lawmakers propose capping property taxes at a pretty low percentage. And, of course, Governor DeWine has formed that working group to help find a solution. This week, we dig a little deeper, but not too deep, into the complicated world of Ohio property taxes with our panel, Republican strategist Terry Casey, Sam Gresham of Common Cause Ohio, as well as State House reporters Jesse Balmert of the USA Today Ohio Network, and Andrew Tobias of Signal Statewide. Andrew Tobias, first to the overrides. Figuring that the House and Senate will succeed in overriding the governor's veto, how are we going to see that in our property tax bills? Will we see that in our property tax bills?
So I think the changes are probably on balance more likely to have reduced the rate of increases in the future. There is one that some county elected officials could decide to unilaterally lower taxes if they want, and that could be something that people experience, although it's probably gonna be pretty modest. So it's kind of more trimming around the edges. There's a provision that does something that's much broader, but that one doesn't seem to have the political support right now to be overturned. But yeah, it's something that people, it might help the next time something like this comes around, but it's also gonna mean less money for schools.
So this, are these symbolic things in the budget, Terry?
Well, this is all driven by the fear of that constitutional amendment that would wipe out property taxes totally. They feel if they do some things, maybe that'll lessen the anger. But the problem is this has been decades in the making because, in all honesty, the General Assembly in the past 20 or 30 years has given too much power to some units of local government to go to the taxpayers. Then there's other things called tax abatements, which are out of control, in my opinion. And also, we need to look at some elements of government, whether there's too much overlap, whether there can be more inefficiency. So you can't solve it in a bill or two. You can't solve it in a year or two.
One of the things would eliminate the replacement levy. I don't want to get too detailed because it's very complicated, but that's the thing I think some agencies are worried about, right, Jesse?
Yeah, I think what lawmakers are trying to get at is like more transparency for the voters so people like know what they're voting on and fewer things that are just automatically going to increase over time. So part of that is making some of these changes there. The broader thing that probably doesn't have the political support right now was something that they were trying to reduce this carryover rate for school districts, making it basically sitting at 40%. Yeah. That's something that school districts were pretty upset about and pretty concerned about. That's not on the list of three vetoes that we're looking at yet. So we'll see if something more widespread comes down the line.
So what do you think, Sam? Working group. Governor DeWine likes working groups. He's named another one. Do you expect anything bold to come out of this one?
No. I see very simply, this is the result of unintended consequences of monkeying with the tax structure across the state. Everything from sales tax, individual tax, corporate tax, they're monkeying with it. Now, what causes the serious problem is the educational system. What it does to the educational system, the lack of money that people have on a local level to educate our kids. I don't think this administration or any Republican administration is willing to do what's necessary. And one of those is raise taxes for corporations and high-income individuals to balance the scenario on the income. But they're not willing to do that. So we're not going to solve the problem.
But shouldn't the school districts, don't they bear some responsibility for operating efficiently, closing schools that are only half filled, looking at Columbus now and places like that?
Yeah, that's true. But the state also has a commitment. Do you remember the school constitutional amendment where they found them guilty? But they didn't really solve the problem. The schools are the last amount to get any money. It's all about trickle down, and trickle down has never worked.
And on the schools, when we got 611 school districts, 611 school superintendents, clerk treasurers, et cetera, in 88 counties, that tells you right there that there's some problems and people like their fiefdoms, but are they willing to keep paying for certain overlap and certain inefficiencies when you got school districts operating with 600, 700, 800 kids K through 12?
Andrew, I went to my property tax bill today just to see how it's broken down. There are 12, my tax bill is broken among 12 different agencies. Let me list them. Adam H., Children's Services, the city where I live, Columbus State, the county, Franklin County, also the county's Developmental Disabilities Board, Joint Vocational School, Library, Metro Parks, the school district, of course, Senior Options, my township, and the Columbus Zoo. That's a lot of taxing agencies all going for levy every few years. Is there any talk about changing that system?
I mean, the short answer is no. And I applaud you for looking at the fine print in your tax bill. That must have taken some real squinting to see all that stuff. But our tax system in Ohio, this stuff is complicated. I mean, as a reporter, I try to explain it. We're trying to talk about it right now in a way that makes sense. And it's not easy to do. Yeah. So it's and part of it is just all the different jurisdictions that people have to fund and also kind of try to differentiate from each other.
Then you look at the other side, Terry, and there's a reduction, there's a homestead exemption, which I don't qualify for, and there's all these other things. It's not simple.
Well, it's very complicated, though the good news is there was House Bill 920 back in 76, which required when you pass a levy, it must be reduced so that it yields a flat line of money except for new construction. So there's a lot of complications, a lot of confusion. But let me also add to the thing called collective bargaining. If you saw this week, Southwestern Schools got a settlement with all their employees. Over 3 years, it's going to cost them about 11 to 12% more. I'm certain they're hardworking and deserving more money. Everybody wants more money. But who's going to pay for that? Because the state's revenue is not growing. The property tax doesn't grow at 11 to 12% over the next 3 years.
But just when you look at our taxes have gone up, as we said, 25 to 30% in the past few years. That's higher than the rate of inflation, which would pay for a 3% raise, 4% raise. Where's that money gone? I mean, we're both paying all this money. We don't know where is this money?
Well, it's like when you're itemizing the things, I think individually people are like, yeah, sure, I like the zoo. I want to support the zoo. I want to support libraries or, you know, whatever else is on the ballot. I think just ultimately it adds up sometimes.
I think this thing we argue about, and Terry started it out, it's a rouge, efficiencies in schools. There's no such thing. Things change too fast. The dynamics and structure, the lack of support from state government. It's the same thing in government. What people don't remember about me, I was chief of staff for the county treasurer here in Franklin County. So collecting the money was my job, and distributing the money was also my job. It's an investment. If you don't want to invest, don't.
Well, that's the ultimate bottom line, right, Andrew? The taxes are high because people approve levies. And there's a certain floor, but after that, they need voter approval, and the schools and the zoo and MRDD, or whatever it's called now, says that you have to, they go to the voters and the voters say yes.
Yeah, and I've reported in communities where they don't have that kind of property tax base, and that means that there's not support services for, you know, like I've been done some reporting in Scioto County recently. There's not a great kind of public support for addiction services and stuff like that. So it's a trade-off, and it's kind of what kind of government do people want to pay for?
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing it in Texas with a warning system for storms. It was too expensive for those counties, and they decided not to do it.
But there are efficiencies to be had. Example, in Central Ohio, all the local libraries here, all the different districts, cooperate on one database so you can see 4 million different items. So there's ways you can be more efficient. And correctly, you mentioned, like, Columbus Schools continues operating a lot of high schools at half capacity, maybe. And there's a lot of other things. When you look on their website, you see four different people, top-level jobs, all in charge of innovation or strategy or some other kind of vague stuff. Believe me, there's ways to cut and trim if they wanted to go after the bureaucracy.
Well, this will be a topic that will not go away, especially if that ballot issue looks like it's going to happen in next fall. Anyway, not that there was much doubt about it, but it looks like money will not be an issue for Vivek Ramaswamy's campaign for governor. The Republicans' formal campaign has raised a record nearly $10 million since he announced his bid in February. His affiliated PAC is raising money, and Ramaswamy, who is worth an estimated $1 billion, told Fox News that he will spend up to $30 million of his own money on his campaign. Ramaswamy is the only major Republican candidate in the race for governor. As of today, he would face Amy Acton, the only declared Democrat. Of course, Democrats await Sherrod Brown's decision on his political future. Terry Casey, what do you make of this fundraising bonanza by Vivek Ramaswamy?
Well, it's partly to send a message to Sherrod, why don't you run for Senate, where he can get a lot more national money, because it's different raising money for governor in Ohio, because liberals on the East Coast and West Coast don't really care about governor in Ohio. They do care about U.S. senators. So Ramaswamy's trying to say to Sherrod, why don't you run for the Senate instead of governor? And Sherrod, again, every day, every week he waits, it makes it tougher to catch up in money. But he's definitely caught in the middle. What's he run for, or does he decide to spend more time with his grandchildren?
So you think the message is that Sherrod Brown, not, say, someone like Jim Tressel, Jesse, who is also thinking about running for governor?
You know, I think the message can be conveyed to multiple people at the same time. And I think that's what the Ramaswamy campaign is trying to say, is, look, we have the endorsements of President Donald Trump, the Ohio Republican Party, which he got a year in advance. He's lined up the support on the fundraising side. And so I think he's really trying to project this strength and this inevitability to his campaign, to either a Tressel or a Brown.
This is a great example of diversity in the Republican Party in Ohio. Does it work? We'll see if it works. I've talked to a lot of white Republicans and a lot of black Republicans, and in the field, they're not ready for this guy. And they're really upset at the Attorney General didn't really get a shot. Ramaswamy went to the board, not to the people in a primary to get selected. They're pissed off about that. So I'm not sure this is going to happen the way people think it's going to happen, because I'm not sure if they're ready for a brown man to be governor of Ohio.
Terry?
I'm surprised, Sam, that you'd bring race into the issue, because I think one of the other dynamics Sherrod's got to consider, Sherrod at his age, literally in politics since he's his 20s, he's now moving into his mid-70s, he's been around politics forever. Ramaswamy's age 39, there's a generational difference. So there's a lot of factors. I'm not sure that race is going to be that big of a factor.
So you think that Republicans will look past race and just at his entrepreneurial career and his charisma on the stump?
And also, I think he's an agent of change, and part of the thing that happened that sunk the Democrats nationally was people wanted a change from what they viewed as Biden and the Democrats being there too long. So there's a lot of issues, a lot of factors. And by the way, I'll put in here an early prediction. Jim Tressel said in July he'd announce what he's going to be doing. And I think he's going to be announcing he likes being lieutenant governor and doesn't want to run for governor, because he realizes the job and the campaign would be quite a task.
Disagree.
Could Ramaswamy's fundraising and wealth backfire Because there's a lot of talk of, you know, the oligarchy and things like that. Andrew, is that a possibility? He's going to have to kind of, would a Democrat, Amy Acton's certainly going to run against that. Sherrod Brown would certainly run against that.
Yeah, we've seen that playbook before by Democrats. And, you know, who comes to mind for me is J.D. Vance in 2022, especially, where he had a lot of funding from one person. So it wasn't, he wasn't the wealthy self-funder to the extent to which we might see Ramaswamy do it. But I think it's a place that Democrats are very comfortable. They want to say that they're the, you know, the for the working man, and this rich guy is trying to buy the election and that kind of thing. So it could be a problem. Although ultimately, I think if a candidate would prefer to have a bunch of money and then get branded with that kind of stuff, or not have any money and, you know, not, I think they'd rather take the money.
Sure, Brown, he doesn't need all the money that Ramaswamy needs to be competitive in that race.
Well, but it's going to be a switch because he's built his campaigns and his history, Congress, U.S. Senator, et cetera, based on being a federal candidate. And shifting to governor is very different. Yes, he ran the Secretary of State's office way back when, but that's a small, tiny office. Running governor, worrying about the roads, the prisons, mental health, schools, all those issues is very different and takes a lot more work running for governor than it does senator.
But Ramaswamy hasn't worked in government at all, except for like 2 weeks with DOGE.
Right, but people also are saying we sometimes like fresh people from the outside. So
I don't agree with that in this particular case. The systemic racism and bigotry that exists in the Republican Party in the state of Ohio is going to allow them to overlook this brown man? I don't believe it.
Jesse, what's the timetable on Sherrod Brown? Any speculation?
You know, I think after 4th of July, you've had a hot dog and a brat with your family, had some nice conversations. Perhaps we'll learn somewhat soon.
Yeah. But Democrats are waiting. They're all sort of in a holding pattern until he decides, right, Andrew?
Yeah, and so are we on this show.
Yep, that's right. And we'll keep talking about it, keep speculating. That's what we do here. Anyway, the state of Ohio is offering hundreds of millions of dollars to support the construction of an advanced manufacturing plant. The company promises thousands of jobs with six-figure salaries, and construction will begin very soon. It's a record award to get a company to locate in Ohio, and the technology not really has been proven successful yet. Sounds familiar? But it's not the Intel deal. It's the taxpayer-supported agreement with Anduril. The company plans to build a plant near Rickenbacker Airport to manufacture military drones and AI-based weapon systems. This week, Jobs Ohio announced a $310 million grant that brings the state's total support to more than $800 million. Jesse Balmer, the Intel project is not going quite as planned, but it doesn't seem to be dissuading the state from taking another risk with this company.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to wrap it up. I think the state and Jobs Ohio in particular really enjoys these like big, flashy, let's bring jobs to Ohio deals. And they look great at the beginning. And then really we find out if they're going to succeed in a few years. And that's what we've been kind of slowly seeing with Intel. And it's too soon to say with Anduril. So it's hard to criticize these things at the outset because everyone likes bringing jobs and industry and interesting new things to the state of Ohio. And then you just have to see how it pans out.
Speaking about touting companies, the head of Jobs Ohio sent out an email touting CNBC's naming of Ohio as the number 5 state in the country to do business. J.P. Nassif wrote, "Major brands like Anduril, Kimberly-Clark, Meta, AWS, Amgen, Sheets, WorldPlay, GE Aerospace, and more are choosing Ohio for their next big move, and so can you, working with the Jobs Ohio team." Terry Casey, which name is not on that list?
Intel.
Intel is not on that list.
Well, but Intel, one way or the other, and I've said it before in this show, it's going to get billed, it's going to do some things because there's so much already invested, but it might not have the Intel name on it. But the good thing about this drone plant is most of that money is staged over years, depending upon how many people they actually hire. So there's some of it's advanced, some of it's not advanced, but a large portion of this one is staged over the number of years. So only if they produce the jobs do they get the money.
But how could you put Sheets on that list? It's a gas station. And not put Intel. I mean, it's just, well, it shows you that they're not, are they embarrassed by it?
The Sheets fans would tell you that it's more of a food place that happens to have gas pumps. So there's debates, but the fans of Sheets, the fans of some of these other ones will tell you that's a big plus in Ohio.
But Mike, I asked a much, much more fundamental question. When did the Republicans start playing a price for these show projects that never really materialized or produced the employment or the capital that they say they're going to do. That trickle down does not work.
Let me give you one word, Honda. Jim Rhodes had the vision back in the 70s to go after Honda, got a motorcycle plant, and now we're at about 50,000, 60,000 jobs.
How much did they pay to get Honda here?
Not that much, because that wasn't the game then. But the game has changed, not just in Ohio, but across the nation.
But that's the last one. Give me another big name that has made a bounce after the big show and, you know, the lights went off. Give me another one.
Well, we don't have as much of the old days of an auto plant that would hire 5,000 to 6,000 people. You got to do it incrementally. And the good news out of this is, whether it's on data centers, which have their pluses and minuses, this plant, it's about technology, and technology is part of the future, whether it's drones or data centers, et cetera. If you don't attract that and attract the people who work there, you're not going to have a future.
Andrew, do we know, the problem with Intel is if it goes bankrupt and the clawbacks, the state may not be able to cover those. Do we know what the clawback provisions are in this deal yet? Sometimes these deals are pretty secret until we get down the road.
Yeah, I haven't done a lot of reporting on it myself, and I know some of them are just now starting to actually get the approval, like the one that you just referenced with Jobs Ohio. So I'm not sure about that. I know the state does try to, implement those kinds of things into the incentives, but yeah, I don't know the answer to that right now.
Mike, there are lots of collateral projects that are associated with these boondoggles. We have all these apartments in the city of Columbus with no parking requirements. If these projects do not materialize and the vacancy rate goes up, what happens to all these apartments?
Well, that's the zoning. That's a whole different thing. But the bottom line is, does Andrew need this money? I mean, they don't. Would they have relocated? Rickenbacker's a nice spot. You can test these aircraft out there.
It's competition. Yeah. I mean, there's only so many of these big projects that happen, and if you don't recruit them, because it's not just that plant, it's all the suppliers and feeders into it, that creates more jobs in the whole equation. Yeah. So,
and I remember about 5 years ago, it had become clear that Jobs Ohio had amassed a huge amount of money. They get funded from taxes on liquor sales, which were doing really well about 5 years ago. The pandemic was going on. So, but we're kind of seeing where that money's going. And I think also to some extent, they have the money, they're gonna spend it. And so we're seeing it with some of these big projects.
They have the money, so they're going to spend the money. We'll see if that money is well spent. It may take a few years. Thanks to our panel, State House reporters Andrew Tobias of Signal Statewide and Jesse Balmert of the USA Today Ohio Network, as well as Republican strategist Terry Casey and Sam Gresham of Common Cause Ohio. We'll be right back.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past half fortnight. This week, we go out of state. As you may remember, Ohio lawmakers recently enacted a law that bans diversity, equity, and inclusion programs at state colleges and universities. It went into effect late last month. Schools around the state have been eliminating diversity departments and programs and scrubbing their websites of any DEI language. Supporters say it will pave the way for more conservative ideas on campus. Opponents say it threatens academic freedom. Well, Eastern Michigan University sees it as a marketing opportunity. It is trying to lure Ohio students who are perhaps upset by the new law. Here's Eastern Michigan's ad that prominently features a young Thai woman touting the school's welcoming environment.
You know what? Every awesome idea came from an individual mind. That is the power of you. To do your thing. To shine. To be extraordinary. And the time has arrived. To explore. To express yourself. To find more you. At Eastern Michigan University, you discover a diverse campus that celebrates individuals, where unique perspectives expand your potential. Come as you are. Be true. EMU.
Another ad reported by Cleveland.com is a little more direct, saying, quote, "Tired of restrictions? Cross the border to opportunity At EMU, we offer in-state tuition for Ohio residents. EMU downplays the effort, saying it has offered in-state tuition to Ohio students for years. And the All Are Welcome campaign, which celebrates diversity, was introduced in 2017. That all may be true, but calling special attention to Ohio's anti-DEI efforts and the tuition break is pretty shrewd marketing. For that, Eastern Michigan University gets our Snollygoster of the Week award. That will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster, which is part of the NPR network. As always, please be sure to give us a good review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Just tell your friends about us, spread the word. For our student producer, Katie Genius, our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.